Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and hello everyone. Jazakallahu khairan, and thank you so much, Brother Mudathir, for inviting me in this podcast organized by Ibn Hawf Club and the other entity. So I'm grateful to them, and it's a pleasure to be here talking about Islamic decentralized finance, the concept of it. Inshallah, let me just give you a very brief background of myself and what I have been doing. So I am co-founder of Alif Technologies, which is a company based in Dubai, and another company, which is Sharia Experts. It is based in London. And I have been working in the crypto, blockchain and DeFi space since 2016. At that time, it was not DeFi. It was only crypto, blockchain and other trends. DeFi trend came later. But let me just tell you that the DeFi as a implicit concept, or even like it has been, when it was not mainstream, it was still there since the inception of Bitcoin and blockchain from 2009. So since then, there have been a concept introduced by this technology, blockchain, about decentralization, distributed ledger technology, and having peer-to-peer financial network. So inshallah, in this podcast, we will be discussing about this concept, technology, and also I will be trying to relate something with the Sharia and Islamic finance. Okay, perfect. So if you look at traditional financial sphere, the financial industry, so you either it is conventional or Islamic, doesn't matter. But both are highly regulated industries, right? Number one. Number two is the point number two is that due to the high regulations, they are very centralized in the sense that, okay, when you are having doing any transaction, or if you are carrying out any financial transaction, any financial product, you interact with them, it is offered by a centralized authority. For example, it may be an Islamic bank offering you house financing, car financing, etc. So you have to basically do all your KYC with them, due diligence, etc., credit history check, etc. And you need to tell them all the, you need to share that with them all the information. That information is collected by the institution, and then they do their compliance, due diligence, KYC, etc. And afterwards, they offer you a product, right? Now, this product can be on the investing side, or it can be on the financing side, both. Or if you are not a retailer, if you are an entity, again, it goes with all the information, the entities, due diligence, etc., and then they can be onboarded. If you look at the capital market products, they are also having a very structured manner where these products are issued by a centralized authority. There are exchanges for Sukuk, for example. So Sukuk settlement are being done by investment bankers. They are facilitated by them, underwriting, etc. So these capital market products are also offered by centralized authorities. I mean, all the banks are there and they are all connected with the central bank. And they have to follow a very structured form of legal and regulatory requirements. And if you are talking about takaful, microfinance, so all these things are actually very traditional one. So then afterwards, what happened is in 2008, when we faced financial crisis, and there were a lot of banks which were about to fail. But then there was a notion that, okay, they are too big to fail. We cannot let them fail because otherwise the whole society will suffer. Because of that, then government and Federal Reserve, central banks came into the picture. They rescued all the banks. But then there was a question from the public that, okay, if these banks were involved in some unethical, greed-driven products, and they were just trying to make some profits out of the situation, they're creating bubbles for the real economy and the real estate, then they should be penalized for that. But then there was a notion that they cannot fail. Because of that, those people actually, on the basis of this crisis and the whole scenario, then they say, okay, if let's suppose they are too big to fail, then there has to be an alternative to that, where you can have a very minimum role of financial intermediaries, even like you can just exclude them from your all financial transactions and do the transaction in a peer-to-peer network. So that was basically the main concept of blockchain and Bitcoin, that Bitcoin was introduced to facilitate the financial transactions or payments in a peer-to-peer environment and through blockchain technology. So like you do not have to interact with a centralized body, with a centralized authority. What you can do is like, let's suppose that I have one Bitcoin, I want to send it to you. So I can just directly send it to you and that transaction will be validated by a community of computer nodes, or you can call them miners. So this is basically the main concept. You do not need a centralized financial authority in between. So that was the concept. Afterwards, so this was basically the beginning of decentralized finance, but decentralized finance as a trend started like 2 years back, 3 years back. Although like the concept was same, but then it became a full trend 2-3 years back. Now, so what is basically, now let's talk about decentralized finance in its current position. So decentralized finance is the concept where you can create financial products, you can offer financial services in a decentralized manner through smart contracts. Smart contracts are again applications which run on blockchain. So blockchain is a platform. You can run different applications on it, software, for example, on blockchain, which are called smart contracts and or dApps, decentralized applications. You can run them. These applications can be tuned to develop or structure a financial transaction, and then you can use them for those financial objectives. So like you can basically have a saving and investment product. You can have a lending and borrowing product. You can have a deposit product. You can have an insurance product, for example. So you can have all these products. Even like you can have a very vast and deep marketplace in a decentralized manner on blockchain. So this is basically the main concept here. Just to give you an example now, that I am working with few projects where we are offering a crypto wallet, which is in banking terminologies, you can say that it is a deposit product. And we are also at the moment, we are developing and structuring an invest crypto investment product. So this crypto investment product is again an alternative to the banking investment product. And then we also have a marketplace. Yep. So actually, blockchain is the platform. Cryptocurrencies are one applications, some application. I mean, you can say one type of application on that platform. Then you can also create decentralized financial products, services, strategies, etc. Okay, perfect. So let me just briefly go through what I want to say in three parts. First part is actually, what is the approach of Sharia towards crypto assets? So the approach of Sharia is that, first of all, we have to see them not as currencies, but as assets. If they are assets, so like if they are crypto assets, then you can have classification. What I'm saying is that you can classify a certain crypto asset as currency, of course, but there are other crypto assets which are not currency. So we have this crypto assets. Some of them are currency. Some of them are not currencies. So this is first classification. And so we should not be calling all of them as currencies. This is wrong. Number one. Number two is, now, if you say all the cryptocurrencies or crypto assets are halal, it's a wrong ruling. And if you are saying all of them are haram, then again, it's a wrong ruling, because there are at the moment almost 20,000 active crypto assets available. Bitcoin is one of them. Ethereum is second. Then the Litecoin, Ripple, and then there are so many. So like there are 20,000 different types of crypto assets. You cannot say that, okay, all 20,000 crypto assets are haram or all of them are halal. right? So we have to check each and every one and say that whether it is halal or haram, just like stocks. So in stocks, you have so many companies in a stock market, and then you analyze on a certain criteria that whether it is Sharia compliant or not. And then you say out of these S&P 500, for example, these are the companies which are Sharia compliant. So same strategy should go with this phenomena, saying that, okay, we have like 20,000, 30,000, whatever is the number. Then you have to analyze each and every of this project and then say whether it is Sharia compliant or not. So number one. Number two, now again, crypto assets can be halal and can be haram, both ways. How do we check them? So like there are two ways to basically approach it. Either you create a completely Sharia compliant project from scratch, or you do a screening of the existing projects. For example, you take Ethereum, you take Bitcoin, you take Ripple, or you take Dot or any other crypto protocol, right? Project. And then you analyze it whether it is Sharia compliant or not. So you can also do that. So there are these two approaches. Now, coming back to your second part of the question, that how do we ensure that, okay, in DeFi, it is Islamic or Sharia rules are actually followed. So what you can do is like you can take Sharia principles. There are some general Sharia principles for financial transactions, right? And then there are some transaction specific rulings and principles for Sharia. For example, a general one is like you avoid riba in all forms, right? You cannot get involved in interest based transactions. So this is a general rule. But there is a specific rule also. For example, you cannot guarantee the profit in a mudaraba contract. This is a very transaction specific ruling and Sharia principle. So what you can do, you can all take all these rulings and then principles, and you can codify them, transform them into a smart contract, so that like it will become a financial product. For example, if you are structuring a mudaraba based transaction, then you have to basically do, first of all, codify all the general rulings, and then you have to codify it specifically for a mudaraba product to run on the blockchain platform. Okay, perfect. First of all, I would say that, okay, although crypto, I see it as a big opportunity for Islamic finance and blockchain and DeFi phenomena. But I also do understand and realize that there is a lot of scams and frauds in this space because of lack of regulations. There are no regulations, there are no financial watchdogs, and authorities are yet to be involved. Because of that, we see that a lot of people are getting into the space to scam others, number one. Number two, there are a lot of common people because of financial difficulties, because of maybe personal greed, or like they want to earn a lot of money, they want to multiply their wealth and savings. So they get into these kind of schemes, which are Ponzi schemes. So I think that this, to avoid this, number one, we have to have general awareness programs, not only for regulators, for market players, but also for the public and masses, so that like they understand that, okay, what is going on there, number one. At least, I mean, I'm not saying everybody has to be a technology expert, but at least they know that, okay, what is going on there, and how to avoid a scam, how to see red flags in a project, etc. Number one. Number two is like they have to control their own greed, or if there is their financial needs, because there is no magic wand over here saying that, okay, we can multiply your wealth or your investment in 1 month time. So this is again a Ponzi scheme. So do not do that. So it has to be systematic, and you have to do your own research because you are responsible for your own investment, number one. For Sharia compliance also. So for Sharia compliance, you have to have some authorities who can basically certify these projects and tell people that, okay, this is halal or this is not. Only then you go to them. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to separate the haram factor from the halal one for common people. Saying that, now coming back to the phenomena, sukuk, for example, all the Islamic finance products can be converted into a decentralized financial product. So it is easy, no problem. Now, the thing is how people can use it, normal people can use it. For example, they can use it for international transactions, for like remittances. If they want to send back money, they can do this in the form of crypto. They can buy a few things in the form from crypto by using crypto on different marketplaces. They can do so, and they can also get into some of the strategies. If now this one will become a little bit advanced for common people, but I think that they can get into the strategies where they can invest in crypto and earn some profit. So this will become an alternative source of income. Just to give you an example about buying and selling through crypto. So in Dubai, you can now buy property like apartments, villas, or plots directly with crypto. So for example, you can directly buy it with Bitcoin and other crypto assets, number one. Number two, you can also buy airline ticket, Emirates airline ticket, with your Bitcoin or crypto. So you can also do that. Another thing is interesting is that recently city centers here in Dubai have got a collaboration with Binance with the cryptocurrency exchange, which means that now they will be able soon to accept cryptocurrency payments for grocery, even like for very small things for a day-to-day basis. So what I'm trying to say here is that this phenomena will stay and you cannot just simply avoid it. A common person needs to understand some of the basics. Number one, how to avoid a scam and what is it and how to utilize it for different purposes, for remittances, for investment. I think that it's a multifaceted problem at the moment. So now we need to understand that what government wants and what is their challenge. So if you put yourself into government's shoes, first of all, they want to have a stable economic system, a financial system, and taxation system. Taxation is also very important for governments, by the way, because this is their income. Number two is like, on one hand, they want to promote innovation, but on the other hand, they want to protect the normal people, consumers, from the scammers, from anything else, right? Because they do not want the common people to lose money at a big scale, because again, it will be an economic crisis for that. So because of that, now this is the government's problem. Number two is like regulators, they are struggling with this phenomenon because this is very, very new. And the pace of innovation is so fast that it was super difficult for them to keep up with the pace. They are struggling with that. So, but again, it is understandable that when something happens, only after that regulations, legal framework will start taking shape about it. So this is understandable. Right now, so then now let's come to the people that, okay, what they are supposed to do then. So if let's suppose that a government has already announced that Bitcoin or crypto assets are banned in the country, then of course, like, you cannot go against the law. For example, in Pakistan right now, they are trying to ban it, but then it's basically regulators have already set up their mind that it is banned. So because of that, if you are dealing with it, and then you will face a lot of problem in the sense that, okay, your bank account will be freezed or frozen or something like that. So do not do that if the government is against it. Now, there are a few jurisdictions which are very welcoming to this phenomena. For example, welcoming in the sense they have like infrastructure, they have regulations now, or a basic regulation is already there, and they are saying that, okay, it is acceptable. For example, you look at Dubai, you look at USA, UK, Canada, Australia, Singapore, Luxembourg, Estonia, Switzerland. So these are the countries where they are saying that, okay, you are welcome, even if you are doing something in crypto. Even if you look at Central Asian countries, for example, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, so they are also welcoming crypto projects at the moment. And they are giving licenses to certain market players. For example, you can have exchange license if you want to open a crypto exchange. You can have e-commerce platform. You can have other licenses. So this is basically being done. So if it is the case in your country that the government is welcoming it and they allow it, then of course you can, then you can basically think of it that, okay, I am doing a business, even if it is not a financial services business, but you can incorporate crypto into your business so that like you can increase your outreach. So yeah, inshallah, by all means, it will be my pleasure to be part of this series and come again, inshallah, no problem. Napachu is the final remarks for the listeners and people out there is that, you know, that Sharia is so beautiful and it not only gives you do's and don'ts, but it also protects you from so many other things. That's why we saw that during the financial crisis, Islamic financial institutions were relatively saved and secured, and they were not they did not take a lot of damage as compared to the conventional financial institutions. Which means that because there was an argument about it that, okay, this was happening due to the they were not involved in derivatives, CDOs, etc., because of the Sharia restriction. So again, I would say that Sharia compliance, following halal thing in every aspect is actually good for you. So in that sense, even if you are dealing with crypto, even if you are trading, for example, I don't mind that if you are trading cryptos, but what you need to ensure is that like the subject matter of the transaction should be halal and the transaction itself should be halal. So these are the two main things I would like to say that, okay, as long as they are halal, inshallah, you will be safe. Number two is basically you need to also ensure that, okay, you are not breaking any law or you are actually dealing with some established player in the crypto. So like even in crypto now, there are so many established players. They can facilitate and they can offer you some of the financial products and services. So always go with them rather than going to a very unknown established player, for example, exchange. If you want to do crypto trading, so go for the most famous, most accepted crypto exchange rather than going to somewhere where there are only 100 people. Maybe they will lure you that, okay, if you come to our exchange that you will get 100% profit, but don't go there, basically. Number one. Number two is as a Muslim, of course, like you have said, is, for example, if you take an example of a stock market, so a stock market is there and a stock exchange trading is actually one aspect of it, but the capital market is so large. There are so many other activities in the capital market itself. So similarly, we should not be thinking about crypto just to being a trading activity. You understand? So there are so many things that can be built. It can transform itself. We can transform it into a complete capital banking and takaful market. If we want to, we can do that. So do not just think of it as a, like a trading opportunity.